Well, good morning to you. Afternoon, whatever. Kelly O'Connell Show, Knockout Radio. And today I've got a few things for you. But the number one is Trump troubles, fate and leftism forcing a joined melee against Trump. His entire presidency has been one dramatic event after another, with many caused by haters and leftists trying to topple him. It seems to keep getting worse. Why do so many absolutely despise Trump? They don't give him credit for anything good he did, and he's just a continual source of amusement or fury for them. How does he weather this storm? Can he get reelected, or is he just toxic? And as he drops in the polls, he's at 39% right now. They're telling us that he's the most unpopular president in history, first term. I don't know if that's true, but if it was, would you be shocked with just pure media hatred against this guy? Never got a apology from anybody on the Russia election or the Russia investigation, pardon me. He never got any apologies for impeachment, which people don't even talk about anymore. It was so weak. Where's his apologies? How does he save his reputation? And you're going to say, Kelly, he brings it on himself. He's got a terrible attitude. He's a martyr. And he's also always has to respond to every single thing that's said about him. And he's a whiner. He's a complainer. He's a cheap shot artist. Yes, he's all of that. But dang it, he's our president. I love the guy. And I have no idea what it would be like to spend time around him. I think it would probably be tough. I'm sure he's very demanding, but I admire his never quit spirit. And what does the left have? Used up, retread leftism, socialism. Come on. It is, the world runs off socialism, does it? I mean, it looks pretty crappy to me from the outside, but thank God I never lived in Russia. Anyway, some more questions for you. What are the lessons of George Floyd? We've had these riots now. I think they're getting a little bit better. I think we turned the corner on the riots when Trump announced that he was going to bring in the National Guard. But typically he did it in a way that was over the top. He's a law and order president. He has got to make some changes. I've got some suggestions for him if he ever listens to this podcast, which I cannot imagine that he would ever do. Now, who's going to take Biden's place? And the reason that I'm asking is because he can't make it on his own. And as time goes by, that's going to become apparent, and that's going to bring his numbers down. And so they're going to be looking for somebody. It could be Michelle Obama, believe it or not. It could be, I don't think Cuomo, for reasons I can go into if you want. But the Democrats don't have anybody, and their party is completely wrung out in terms of talent. I mean, the leadership, Nancy Pelosi's almost 80, and she's terrible, a terrible hag, isn't she? And Schumer is also bad. He's a whiner. Where's Matt Drudge? The Drudge Report is turned into a garbage pit. It's the most depressing thing I've ever seen. They say he's been bought out of the Drudge Report. And apparently hates Trump now. Xfinity, I'm using Xfinity. I switched to it. It is terrible. I had it at my house, and it was fine. But Xfinity in my business, which is where I'm shooting this podcast, I swear that every time you turn it off, you have to almost reboot it from the modem. And it's just constantly going down, and it's supposed to be super fast and high powered and everything, and it's terrible. And I know somebody else who's got similar service, and he's constantly got these people out there. Is it that hard to shoot internet into your place these days? And then Endgame for Sullivan and Flynn. Sullivan is the judge who's become woke. Emmett Sullivan has become woke, and now he's refusing to drop the Flynn case, and it's really terrible to see. And what you're going to get from all of these things that occur that the left does to try to hang on to power or get more power. There's always an after effect, and it always brings in something terrible that didn't used to exist. And in this case, it's bringing in the notion that judges are independent parties who can do what they want in a case. And for instance, he's going to bring in a retired federal judge to actually judge Flynn, who it's already been proven was not treated correctly, and therefore they should have never been talking to him in the first place. And it's going to bring up the idea that judges have rights. They have their, in addition to judging a case, they have the right to take their own posture, and they could fight back on what a prosecutor or a defendant, a defense team wants. They can bring in their own ideas. They can extend things. And I mean, I think clearly Judge Flynn is trying to extend this as far as he can towards the election. He's working with Barack. I believe he and Barack are good friends, or something along those lines. But anyway, let me get you some headlines here. George Floyd updates, mostly peaceful across America. Is that true? I really don't know, but I'll take their word for it. Steve King, a guy that they said was a racist over in Iowa, was a very prominent member of the U.S. House, made some remarks that people found to be racist, and they took away all his positions in Washington, D.C., and then they just kind of, you know, they isolated him. And so the outcome is that he lost and he's gone now. LAPD is going to limit the use of rubber bullets. And, you know, it's funny. Do you think that making the police softer, taking away tools or forcing them to do things in a different way, is it going to make a better life for everybody? And I don't think so. I don't think it is. And the reason I say that is because it's not bad strategy. It's bad cops who are not going to follow the rule book anyway. Now they're calling for a revamp of the FBI, and Trump had talked about shutting the FBI down and coming back with a new agency. And I think Trump is too weak and it's too late for him to do anything like that. I think it is possible that Trump would lose. I didn't think so a few months ago before COVID, but between COVID and the riots and the fact that Trump has this amazing ability to step on his own good news and attack people when there's no reason for it, I don't know. I've never seen anybody with better or worse instincts at the same time. I'm not kidding. I mean, I love Trump. He'd be a good friend. He'd be a terrible enemy. But he is... there's a time to back off, clearly, and there's a time to apologize or to not respond to people's stuff. You've got to play chess, not checkers. Now, Trump is really good at trolling people. He's good at getting a vision and working on it, but he's doesn't seem to have much discipline when it comes to not responding to people's attacks. And I get the fact that he was, you know, he was unfairly attacked before he ever went into office, but he has yet to really turn that into sympathy for him, which is mysterious to me. Mississippi prosecutor saying, I hope all the rioters get COVID. What do you think about that? The media always has a leftist agenda, and they've stopped trying to hide it. And they, you know, what they're saying now is you're not going to be able to go back to supposedly unbiased reporting anymore because everybody is smoked out. Everybody is standing there exposed for what they stand for. So what's the guy's name? Jake Tapper is a total leftist. And you know what's funny to me about leftism? You don't have people of the left talking about what they believe in without trashing other people, number one. And number two, I just find this so amazing how morally upright they, I mean, how morally superior they are. And it is terrible because, you know, you do want to get news that you can put faith in. If someone is taking a leftist position openly, then there's going to be the sense that this person isn't telling me the truth. They're not telling me all the facts. You know, what happened to the idea? Give me the facts and I'll sort them out. So now which made room for Fox News because people didn't trust the media because they understood that they were being propagandized. So you're going to have these TV networks, these news networks out there. They're going to stand for their own stuff. And it's going to be of the left. And I think that, you know, it's to the point now that I don't think that people, unless you were a true leftist, people no longer see the good or they don't see the purpose of being so biased anymore. It's sickening. You don't have anything to gain with getting all of one side's opinion, you know? You've got to go out, take a few risks by just telling the truth and hoping that people will draw the right conclusion. But these people on the left, they just don't come across as thoughtful or educated, which sounds crazy because they're totally marinated in the news all the time. If anybody has an opportunity or a duty to be educated on history and such, it is the media. And so anyway, we're absolutely choking on media opinions that are leftist, and these kind of unwarranted, out of the blue attacks on President Trump and others that don't really seem to stand for anything other than statements of what the media people believe, and they're the newsmakers. They're the ones who are. And you remember when Trump was running for office, he came across the people who opposed him, like Megyn Kelly, came across as, I stand for truth. My feminism is true. You've got to bow the knee down to feminism, or I'm going to personally knock you out of the game. There's so many of these giant killers that went after Trump who ended up getting killed. So Megyn Kelly is really no longer in the news. I know she's got her own TV show or whatever, interview show. But she was at Fox News and riding high. People deeply resented her for her attacks against Trump and her self-righteous attitude that she was going to take him down. And she ended up leaving and going to, was it NBC, where she had her own little show, and it just didn't work out because she couldn't be an Oprah. So she was, I think, a former prosecutor or maybe just an attorney, but just didn't work out. But the point being that you've got all these people out there that have spent their entire career hating Trump, the entire presidency and pre-presidency of Trump in hating him. And they think now that he's struggling, there's going to be the sense that they were right. I will never, ever give these people any credit for not giving somebody an opportunity to have a honeymoon period and to get America up again, get them MAGA, make America great again. I'll never forgive these people myself because what they did was stupid. What they did was self-righteous. What they did was nonsensical. And this hatred of Trump, and I've got some deep misgivings about Trump that most people do. And a lot of people who support Trump will never put word to those, but, you know, blind faith in anybody is a danger. So let me ask you one of the questions I had for you. What is the lesson from George Floyd? And I guess the obvious question or the obvious point is, don't kill somebody for nothing. Don't do a stupid action or make stupid decisions that harm other people. Floyd is laying on the ground. He's got three cops standing on him. He's got a knee on his neck. He's begging to be let to breathe. He's got a nosebleed. He pisses his pants, and then he dies. And this guy who did this should get murder one. A cop who does an unjustified, cruel act like that should have the book thrown at him, don't you think? So that's one lesson. But other than that, I mean, what are we going to do? Put everybody through sensitivity training for black people? I mean, which is what we've done this last couple of decades. You know, and maybe I don't see it myself, but, you know, if the last person to ask about water is a fish, right? I mean, you're totally subsumed in something. There's got to be things that the average American may not be aware of that maybe other cultures or other times would see. But, you know, the thing about America was always do the best job that you can, have a good plan, discipline yourself, sacrifice, focus, and ultimately you're going to end up with success. And that's still got to be the, you know, the plan and everything. But I think, you know, a lot of this stuff goes back to slavery. You can say it's a sin and was punished by God, or you can just say it was a stupid idea, but it caused a civil war. It caused a permanent sense in black people that they were second-class citizens. And I don't think that Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton have made it any better because they try to stir up victimization. But, you know, I think the thing is better disciplined cops, better training. And, you know, this will eventually go away, the outrage and the riots, but have the one standard for everybody and apply it and then defend it. If you get criticized, defend it on those. But, you know, they're now the cops, the police union in Minneapolis is stating that this guy had a history of violence. But unless that was something that they had to relate to at the time, I don't see how that really helps them. So, lessons of Floyd. Now, where is Joe Biden in all this, and what is Joe Biden, what's his plan? All right, so you've got to get out there, the idea, and I was thinking it would be funny to make a puppet, a Joe Biden puppet, and just to kind of emphasize the fact that he's totally lost. You know, Biden's lost, and this is another trick by the left. Here's my problem with American politics. There's one group of people that you hold to a high standard. They always have to tell the truth. They can't have any affairs. They can't lie, cheat, or steal. And even if they're upstanding good people, you still attack them. And those are the Republicans have to always be attacked because they're hypocrites, because they are oppressive. You know, they're oppressing people into their ideas, their old American founding fathers' ideas. And then you've got this other group of people who can do anything they want, and those are the Democrats. And I think that there's a lot of leftists, or maybe not leftists, but liberals and Democrats who are secretly very, very disgusted with their party, and they don't like it, what it's become, but they don't support the ideas of the Republicans enough. I don't know that a third party is going to come out. What I think is going to happen, and what almost happened, is the Democratic Party almost collapsed. Now, maybe they can beat Trump, but what are they going to build on? How do you build on socialism and make a better planet, a better country to be successful? And, you know, socialism is based on, really, it's also victimization, you know, and it is like this, these riots. You're going to riot. I understand that. You've got a right to protest, and the protest turns into riots. But how does looting, how does stealing and violence and destroying property and beating people up Every shop owner that came out to defend themselves that I saw was knocked down and beat up and kicked in the face and all these things. How does that help the country? How does, if you're a black person or a person of the left who's protesting and you want a better world, how does your violence, how do your riots and arsons and all that, how do they make the world a better place? How do they, in other words, how do they take the bad things in Floyd and show the whole world, show the country the right way to do it? So they, of course they don't. So what you then have is a group of people that are looking for leadership. So who's the leader? If the leader of your party or your movement, I should say, is Nancy Pelosi, or it's Jesse Jackson, or it's Michael Moore, who was going to go up and lead people into rioting, supposedly he was going to fly somewhere and take a leadership role in rioting. That's what I read. If those are your leaders, you are in desperate trouble. I think what you need is a new Martin Luther King. He was effective because he was nonviolent, number one. Number two, he was a man of the cloth. So he didn't try to harm others. And he was also, he had a vision. I have a dream, right? We still talk about that as the greatest speech ever. Now, Antifa. Does Antifa exist? My buddy Pete is giving me lectures on the fact that Antifa does not exist. It's another boogeyman. It's another out of nowhere group that everything can be blamed on. And Antifa does exist, and they've found them in various places. But here's the problem. They're not supposedly centralized. And Trump wants to turn these guys into domestic terrorists. He wants them named as that. I don't see a problem with that because these guys' whole purpose is to be violent. And their logic, their argument is they attack other groups like skinheads. That's how they were formed in the late 1980s. Or they attack white supremacists or whoever, you know, whatever group. And their argument is, number one, we have the right to take away free speech from other people that are already taking away free speech from others. Now, that's a suspect position to take. Number two, they are violent. We have every right to be violent. Violence used to make the world a more free and less violent place is totally acceptable to them. So, I mean, I think you've got to go out and you've got to do some research when all of these riots are over or during, or even right now, which I'm sure they're doing, and show that, do the research, prove that Antifa was involved, and take it from there. But you've got to collect information on all these people that are committing crimes during these riots and try to bring some of them to justice. I mean, people have to be afraid of the idea if they don't do the right thing, they are going to be prosecuted, right? So now, what's going on with Xfinity? I really don't know. I just kind of threw that on there as a joke, but there is something wrong with Xfinity service. I don't know if it's just local here, but it's just, I mean, constantly turning on and off and having to re-enter your information. It's really terrible. So I just wouldn't recommend Xfinity. It costs a lot. It's like three times as much money as I was paying, and the service is about 10%. Pardon me. Now, what's the end game for Sullivan and Flynn? Well, Judge Sullivan has done a couple of things, one of which is he has said that he's got a right to not just dismiss this. Now, here's the problem is you're working for somebody. Imagine being in the military and you're a sergeant or whatever, and a general comes up and tells you to do something. And you say, well, I don't think I want to do that. And the general says, what are you talking about? I'm your commanding officer. And the sergeant says, well, I think it's an unprincipled choice. Well, you're not there to make that call. Now, obviously, if the general says, comes up and hands the general a gun, the general comes up and hands the sergeant a gun and says, I want you to go over and shoot this guy who he knows to be innocent. Of course, he's got to resist that. But this is not that kind of a situation where General Flynn is a very bad person. He's, on the alternative, a very honorable guy who served his country with great distinction. He's a three-star general. He fought in the field against ISIS and did very well, and then criticized Obama's approach to terrorism. And so he got Obama mad. Obama fired him. Now this plays out. And here's the problem. I think that, you know, one of the issues here is the question of whether Sullivan was involved in this collusion to get Trump. I'm serious about that. I mean, I don't see that Sullivan survives this. Now, he's 71, 72. It doesn't really matter to him, probably. He's wealthy, well-known. But there has to be a reckoning over what's going on here for a judge to hire his own attorney to argue his position is crazy. He doesn't, you know, if you can't put your own ideas out there as a judge, you should leave the bench. If you can't defend your own ideas. What they're trying to do here is open up new territory for judges to express themselves and to prosecute Flynn until the election. And I'm sure after that, I mean, they'd love to see him go into prison for a while, but they are covering up the initial sin. The initial crime was against Flynn, and it wasn't Flynn against the government. They denied him his civil rights. They denied him his constitution. They denied him the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments. And so instead of admitting that there was a mistake and going along with it, Sullivan is purposefully and quite knowingly, he is taking part in a continuing obfuscation. So I think until you deal with those issues, what's going on is just more of the same. And so you've got a very divided country right now. The people on the left are going to say, you go get him, Judge Sullivan. What a hero. This guy's standing up to truth with power. Or standing up to power with truth. And we support him, and Trump is evil, and he's a criminal and all this. I am absolutely astounded at the number of people who've gone on record very early in Trump's administration or before he went into office to talk about what a Hitler he was, you know, a junior Hitler. And I don't see anything in his record that would have justified that. You've got this guy who's a NBA coach, Greg Popovich. And Greg Popovich is one of the most woke and leftist basketball coaches. He's been very successful, but he has gone after Trump again and again. I don't get it. I don't see the point of coming across as a reactionary or as a person who is full of hate, a judger. And I mean, I don't see a person who is, excuse me, you know, who was Greg Popovich? He's a fairly successful coach. But I don't see how he is what great truth he's bringing out there. Trump is not a leftist. And so it's, Trump is not a leftist, and so of course there's going to be a disagreement. And then instead of addressing somebody's positions, you just say, well, this person's a moron. Well, hey, everybody knows that Greg Popovich is an educated guy. He went to the military academy, or he went into the Air Force anyway, did his 5 years. He's a smart guy. But how much does he know about politics? Specifically, how much does he know about government or economics? How did he become the expert who would then lecture a sitting president on how he should be acting? But my point being is that, you know, you've got this guy who's successful, and he's making the mistake of thinking he's successful in one area, therefore he's successful in another. And that's Popovich. It's also Steve Kerr, who's the coach for the former world champion team in California. I can't even remember their name. But it doesn't matter. I mean, stop misusing your job. But one of the things that we're taught these days is that everybody can have an opinion on this stuff, and it doesn't matter how wrong you are. So, excuse me, I think Thomas Sowell would point out, expertise in one area means nothing in another. And, you know, anybody who promotes leftism is ultimately is supporting some type of socialism. And, you know, that you acting like you know everything about economics and history, and that you're a good guide for those who are moving forward, your fellow man, your countrymen. Where's the evidence that leftism works? And so, and there's a lot of things that go with leftism. Excuse me. Historically, leftism has been associated with the loss of human rights and the loss of life. Now, why would you want to fool around with that? Why would you want to take a risk with it when it's already been proven long, long, long ago, when hundreds of millions of people died in various communist countries, that it's just not a, it's not an appropriate or an effective, or kind and gentle way of running a government. I mean, why do you have to fail at something 300 times before it becomes a point in your mind that it doesn't work? So that's a great question, isn't it? So let's get back to Trump, though. And I was looking at all of the stuff that's coming out against him, that he's got the worst polls in history. And that in and of itself doesn't mean anything, because Trump has already overcome a lot of impossible tasks to make it to where he's at. But I mean, at some point, I think he needs to modify his approach. Even Obama, who acted when he was first got into office like he didn't care about anything. And, you know, Obama had this weird thing that he did where he acted like he was too cool to care, which is kind of a high school thing, right? The cool guys don't get too upset about anything, and whether they're approved of or not, or whether they're successful or not, they're too cool to care. And I think that that's kind of how Obama was. And then when the election was coming up, he started to act concerned because his polls were down. And they say if he hadn't killed Osama bin Laden, which is a friend of mine, Pete, says, you know, that's this great achievement of his. His great achievement is killing Osama bin Laden and doing Obamacare. So, I don't need to point out that he's got a pretty thin resume, but even he started to care or act like he cared. I don't think he wanted to lose. So what, let's name 10 things that Trump could do for a better opportunity to win. I'm going to type this down right now because I haven't come up with it before. Number one, stop bragging. Right? Nobody likes a bragger. Trump's default is bragging because I guess he's a little bit insecure, as we all are. So that's one, stop bragging, which is, I mean, it goes without saying, but I think that Trump's really been traumatized here, so stop bragging. The second one would be occasionally apologize. The third one is stop talking about yourself. A fourth one, I think, would be to have a little more of a vision. Power on. And that's my little power saver, if you heard that in the background. Vision. Let's just come up with five. Number five is he's got to reconnect with, you know, people that were originally supporting him, like Matt Drudge. I mean, I don't know what's happened to Drudge. They say that Drudge's website has been sold, which I believe, because it's just radically different. Now it's just nonstop Trump bashing. And, you know, I think Trump approaches every conflict as if the conflict has to continue. And what he could do is just say, hey, I understand you're disappointed. What could I do to get you back on board? And I think that Matt Drudge is very good friends with Ann Coulter, who's a brilliant person, but she went after Trump when he wasn't able to get the wall built, and as if that was his position. So one of the things that Trump has dealt with ever since he got into office is constant, continual resistance and the treatment as if he's a Satan. Okay, you have to get the first one. You have to promote the idea that he's a Satan before you can then justify resisting everything that he wants. And so, you know, people like Popovich are helpful because these people still act like, you know, the thing of the left is it's elitist. And what is elitism? Elitism is the idea that there's a small group of people in the society who are ultra, ultra intelligent and educated, and that it's their opinion that counts. And so when you become educated like that, for some reason you suddenly support leftism. And, you know, I don't understand the connection between becoming a left or seeing yourself as an elite person and then accepting leftism. I think it kind of reminds me of Balzac, the famous author, the French author, who was writing a masterwork when he died, but he had written a lot of it already, The Human Comedy. I mean, the mistakes that human beings make are often so obvious and avoidable, and yet we still make them. And it is just, you know, I don't know what to call it. I mean, it's seeing yourself as a great person or as an elite individual, to me is dangerous ground to begin with, and then to go with it. And so somebody like, keep thinking about Greg Popovich because, I think he's a hypocrite. I mean, I think he is, in his mind, he's super worldly. He's, one parent is Serbian, the other one's Croatian. He's got this Eastern European kind of communist background behind him. And he is, may have been a successful coach, but there's been a lot of successful coaches. He's not more successful than Phil. Michael Jordan's coach. What if Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan were the same person? So, you know, the guy, though, he had a player, and I'm trying to remember his name. Was it Bruce Bowen? There was a player that he had who was famous for being involved in injuries to other players. And what he would do is somebody would, he'd be guarding somebody. He was kind of a defense specialist. He went to shoot, somebody went to shoot the ball, and Bruce Bowen would put his foot underneath them. So when they landed, they would land on his foot and twist an ankle and a sprain or break an ankle. Now, one time he was, they were playing, Spurs were playing the Suns, and Steve Kerr, who's this incredible basketball player, one of the greatest shooters in history, and yet was known for distributing the ball, for giving assists, and he was killing these guys. And they were coming up to, I think it was a game six, I think if, I believe if the Suns won, and I can't remember, but it seems like a game six, game five, game six, in a seven game series, that if the Suns had won this game, then they would have won the series. They would have gone into the finals, which they deserved. They had an incredible team. And so Bruce Bowen at one point is guarding Steve Kerr and accidentally knees him right in the anatomy, right? Just, of course, an accident. So Steve Kerr is laying on the ground for like 2 minutes, holding his groin. Another thing they did is they got, they were guarding, the two big guys come up and Steve Nash was one of the greatest players to ever watch. They were guarding him and knocked him into the scores table, and he claimed later that he was knocked out. So they hit him hard enough to knock him out, and, you know, he finally gets up and everything. But what happened when that occurred is two of the players for the Suns stepped over the line to get a better look at what was going on down the court, and the commissioner, Stern, he suspended him for the next game, and of course they won. And now the thing is that Popovich and Stern were very tight, and that said to me the fix was in. I thought it was sad because, you know, you want to see the best teams in a championship. But on top of that, Greg Popovich, who goes around and lectures people and gives them, you know, insults, he called Trump a moron. Who in the hell, pardon me, is Greg Popovich? And he reminds me of John Brennan, who said during this fake investigation that was done against Trump, he says, you're one of the most venal, and he had this long string of adjectives, these insults to Trump, and he says, finally, America will survive you. Well, you make up a story about somebody, and then you come out and pretend that, you know, this person is Satan incarnate. You attack them. You attack their family, pardon me. You go after them hammer and tongs. And, you know, the upshot is that you call him into, you know, you turn him into a devil, and all these people hate him. They don't know that the whole Russia thing was a hoax. I just got a text right now reminding me that Trump got impeached. That is just so pathetic. So what's the hatred with Trump about? I mean, some of it is personality. Some of the things that Trump does, I find irritating. Let me ask you something. If you had a pitcher, keep it on sports. If he had a pitcher and he threw 105 miles an hour and he was just devastating. And he knocked, you know, he just struck people out all the time and was part of a wildly successful team. Would you get rid of him because of his personality? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think you'd keep the guy, you'd pay him more, and you'd live with his personality. I mean, Trump is a very successful person. He's been a very successful president. He's fought every fight that we've needed, you know, and now he withdrew us from who? World Health Organization, which is a total hoax that helped hide the coronavirus. And, you know, why get rid of him? Let me ask you this. Is it really true that all we care about is not even politics, but all we care about is being politically correct? And who has stated, I want to hear the statement, connecting political correctness to success? How does training people to get offended and kind of upping their sense of aggrievement, how does that make for a more successful country? Doesn't it make people more neurotic and anxious and angry? So who on the left is going to come in and pull a Trump? Who is going to come in and cut regulations and cut taxes and grow the economy and stand up to our enemies like China? And do all of these things. He's had so many different plans over the years that he's been in, the couple of years that he's been in, and they've been for the most part wildly successful. Why is that less important than whether he defends himself strongly to people who are what's the point? But so I was involved in an election yesterday. I was a challenger, and I found a lot of ballots that were not up to the code, and yet they were still accepted, so I had to challenge all those. But it's a massive problem down here in New Mexico. So, you know, if I had a dollar for all of the people that I said I lived in New Mexico, and they said, what is it like? What does it feel like to live in a foreign country, you know? So let me ask you about this. There is a percentage of people, and I will tie this up with this guy who is the mayor of Minneapolis. There's a woman facing up to 10 years behind bars for encouraging others to loot and throw bricks at buildings in a Facebook Live video. Alexandria Allie Lyons posted herself during the week in Grand Rapids in a riot that damaged 100 businesses. And on her live Facebook, she is heard multiple times encouraging her friends and others to throw bricks or other objects at windows of multiple businesses. At one point, picks up a brick and mentions heading back to the courthouse. She stole jewelry from a smashed case on the sidewalk, telling her friends to get her a gold bracelet because she already has the silver ones. 22 years old. She is a blonde-haired girl. So here, let me ask you this. The people that are really upset, these young white people who are taking part in these events, and they're also rioting, they're also looting. What are your opinion? Do you have any different opinion than if a black person did that? So I was going to talk to you about this guy who was or is the Minneapolis mayor where this stuff happened. And this guy's name is Jacob Frey. And so he did a video afterwards. He was asked why he told the police to abandon the third precinct, and he said he thought somebody was going to get hurt. Now, it never occurred to him that maybe more people would get hurt if he pulled back the police and let these guys run rampant. But be that as it may, you know, the building, I think, was destroyed. And so what was Frey's background? He's a young guy. He's kind of being treated as a superstar. And compared to Trudeau up north, which is very appropriate, and he did not seem to have any concept of any sense of how to handle a crisis, and I don't think it even bothered him. So he, looking for information, he defends his action to not defend, he defends his actions to pull the police back from the third precinct. Now, he is claiming that it's the governor who made the mistake, the governor who is the one who he called and asked for the National Guard, and the National Guard did not make it there in time. So he was an athlete. He was a very successful runner, a long-distance runner. I think he almost made the Olympics, and then he went to law school and got a law degree. Now they call him a former attorney, but he was a community organizer. So I just looked up the duties of a community organizer, and I wouldn't even want to waste my time reading it to you, but is being a community organizer prepare somebody for a crisis? So you might say, well, Kelly, you know, nobody knew this crisis was happening. How was this guy supposed to be prepared? Well, you have to admit some leaders are better prepared for a crisis than others. And Jacob Frey was not at all prepared for this, and he got up and said how upset he was about the murder or the killing of George Floyd, and that the perpetrator needed to be charged. The mayor fired the four policemen that were there, but he acted like he was going to cry. And what he should have been doing is gathering plans, calling people, making arrangements for other police officers to come down to give him some backup, some state police. And, you know, he might have done some of that, but if he had done that, why were there so many comments that the riots didn't appear to have any police officers at them? So you've got an angry group of people that are largely unarmed, and they're marching down the street, and they're going to, you know, yelling and going to businesses and starting to break windows and smash cars, light cars on fire, looting buildings. The Target was just turned into, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they abandoned that spot and rebuilt somewhere else, but Target was absolutely looted. And people going in and grabbing stuff and then leaving and coming back to get more. And they had pictures, they had videos in there of people who were using drills and hammers to smash the cash registers. And so what part of stealing is an answer to this attack on Floyd? I mean, I understand anger, but why do you have to add, you know, violence against innocent people and looting and arson? So was Mayor Frey ready for this assault? If you wait until you have a crisis, it's too late to get prepared. Frey was not prepared for the crisis. Now, do you think because he's politically correct or he's woke or he was a community organizer that is a defense or an explanation? I don't see what it is. I mean, how would it be? I mean, if you have beliefs that are inconsistent with how to live a safe life as a leader, then what are you doing with your time? You know, so it was just absolutely astounding that he allowed that to start off. And my argument is, if he had been prepared and had a better response to these rioters, I don't think it would have spread around the country the way that it did, because it gave people the sense that they could go out, and as long as they were upset about George Floyd, that they could do whatever they wanted, and that's what they did. And so, I mean, I'm all in favor of freedom of speech, but this wasn't about freedom of speech. It was about, really, about having an excuse and doing a crime. So, now, in the same way, the mayor of, and this is what I think a crisis exposes, weaknesses. And so, in the same way that you got this mayor, Bill de Blasio of New York, and all of these leftist mayors tend to act like they're better than other people because of what they believe. Now maybe that's natural, but let me ask you this. In this particular case with Bill de Blasio's response, where he refused to bring in the National Guard, and there's all kinds of violence and there's all kinds of looting and arson and everything, police being attacked, police cars being burned in the road, how are Bill de Blasio's beliefs and his actions for a crisis? Now, supposedly, and this was stated by Mayor Giuliani, that he knows, he has heard through the grapevine that Bill de Blasio is going around the police commissioner and calling up police precinct captains and saying, I would like it if you wouldn't arrest people. And that's basically telling individuals, because these guys on the left are so into protest, that you can just go ahead and do whatever you want, obviously, or the protesters can. And what about that lady in Baltimore who said, we have to give the protesters room? So, what, I mean, for the sake of the argument, why do you have to give them room? Because if you give them room to protest and they go over the top, what's going to be the result? You're basically just willing into action, chaos and disaster and theft and death. So, what is the ultimate message? I think the ultimate message is that these people have a right to be angry, which nobody disagrees with, but these people have a right to destroy and steal. That's the clear implication. If you're telling the police don't arrest anybody, it's because they're not doing anything that's bad. And, you know, I mean, so the third precinct building was destroyed. Now, if he had gotten if the mayor, who was very emotional and I thought was going to cry on TV, and do you find that appropriate? I mean, I find it crazy. Don't wear your heart on your sleeve when you're a mayor and you're in the middle of a crisis, because it's your job to master the crisis. And one of the reasons people put faith in you is because you have the look of a leader. So, I don't know. I just, you know, here's the answer to the problem. The problem is leftism. Leftism is an abandonment of Western ideas and standards. It's an abandonment of God and the church and, you know, obviously Marx made religion illegal, but it's an abandonment of all the things that brought us to be so successful, and yet these people couldn't be more proud of themselves. And I really think we need to take back control of this nation and to put it in a position where it's a better country than what we were given. So, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. I know I've been all over the place a little bit, but appreciate you listening in, and I'm going to have some good content for you tomorrow, and I'm going to set up an email account so that you can email or that you can call in. I'll have a call line. Thanks a lot. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell Show, Knockout Radio. Ciao.